and you're on Third Degree Radio. And with us we have Andy Small, who's just been back from... He's just come back from New Orleans.
Yes, 4 months in New Orleans. I was just doing an internship over there. So, I guess I can answer any questions you might have about New Orleans. I'm by no means an expert, but I'll try to answer anything.
What's left of it?
What's left of New Orleans? That's a good question. Well, the city itself is still there because the floodwaters have receded. Population-wise, there were 500,000 living there before the hurricane in September 2005. Now there are 300,000. A lot of people have moved away for good because they're not going to come back and rebuild their houses and set themselves up for another fall. But the city has rebounded somewhat. There are still signs of the flood all over. You know, there are markings on lots of buildings all around town that are remnants from afterwards, where they marked like the number of dead people or dead animals that were inside the house. But the people have a sense of humour. Like, a popular drink there now is the Hurricane, which is a cocktail which has four shots in it, so you can drink away your sorrows. The Superdome, which made headlines for all the atrocious things that happened in it afterwards, that's now being used for New Orleans Hornets games. So that's all back to normal.
What about the historic attractions of the city? Is it still going to be like a tourist spot?
Yeah, the historic attractions are pretty much still intact because they were on the older parts of the city. So the parts that you saw on the news were the ones that have been more recently populated, were also populated by the poorer, blacker residents of the city. So the richer areas that were the more historic, they're still there. And almost perversely, the tourist appeal seems to have multiplied since the hurricane. It reminded a lot of people of New Orleans, and now a common thing for visitors to do is to take a bus tour of the affected areas.
How do they sell that?
It's very morbid, and because there are some areas that are still 95% uninhabited, the suburbs that were under 22 feet of water. So people drive through, and they had to stop the bus tours because people who were trying to rebuild their houses and put their lives back together started attacking the buses, as you would.
So you were there?
Yes.
Not to visit the area, but...
I just got placed in New Orleans as it happened. I could have ended up in Mississippi or Austin either. I was there with an organisation from Melbourne. They sent me over there called Reprieve, and they campaign against the death penalty. And one of the things they do is send interns over from Australia to do 3 or 4 months unpaid work in a legal defence office. The work that we do, there's legal work, so anything really, legal-related admin, having to drop things off at court, and Reprieve also places an emphasis on humanitarian work too, which is, I guess, keeping up contact with the clients who are locked away and languishing in jails, helping their families visit them.
So what's the prison population like? How many people are on death row?
I think there's about, in Louisiana, that's the only statistics I can give you. I think there are about 300 people on death row. There's a permanent population at the state prison of 5,000. And then each parish has its own prison. There are, I think, 60 or 70 parishes. And out of that permanent population in the state prison, I think about 60% are going to die inside prison, either because they're on death row or because they're serving a life sentence without parole.
Did you notice a clear race divide in terms of who's on death row?
Definitely, yeah. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but I recall there was probably 80% of the people on death row would have been African-American. There were maybe 15% white people, and then 5% would have been Hispanic or Asian-American.
And in a place like New Orleans, where you were doing voluntary legal work, is that because most people weren't able to afford representation?
Yes, that's a big factor, and that's one of the things that motivated me to go over there, because the people who end up on death row, it's not necessarily the people who've committed the most heinous crimes, it's the people who can't afford legal representation. My boss over there had this saying, which almost rang true. He said it was called capital punishment, because the people who don't have the capital get the punishment.
Yeah.
And that's very, very sadly true, even now.
So what were some of the some of the things that you saw, or you visited the prisons?
Yes, I visited the state prison a few times. They sent me there to visit people on death row. That's something they get the interns to do, just to keep up a bit of human contact, which was, yeah, a very interesting experience. The state prison there is an old plantation, and in some ways many of the practices of the past, you know, are still happening in the present. Up until the 80s, there were no black prison guards there. So, and the majority of the inmates were black, so I guess the plantation culture continues these days. The only difference is now people get paid 20 cents an hour for their hard labour in the fields.
What sort of stuff did you witness? I mean, did anyone...
Witness.
Did anyone you were working with get given the death penalty while you were there?
No. The thing that generally happens with these cases, they go on for years and years and drag on. One client of ours had actually been sitting in jail, not on death row, for 5 years without any sort of charge getting laid. The excuse of the prosecuting office was that because of Hurricane Katrina, they were justified in taking these delays.
For 5 years.
Yes. So one of the things they got interns to do was just visit people who are on death row and pretty much languishing, waiting for appeals to happen. I mean, more than anything else, it's just the boredom that gets to them. They have 23 hours a day to themselves. So, I mean, that is...
So they're in solitary confinement while they're on death row?
Yeah, solitary confinement. I mean, they get television and books, but aside from that, you know, the thing that does them in more than anything else is just the boredom and the isolation.
So what do you... Did you meet with some people? What do you say to...
Yes, well, they'd give me a couple of legal messages to pass on, and that would take, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, and then I'd have 2 hours to talk to them. I was amazed. Just we'd chat about everyday things. One of the people I visited wanted to know my take on Kevin Rudd's apology to Indigenous Australians.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, which was odd talking about in the middle of Louisiana in America. what else?
What did he think about it?
Tim thought it was a positive move. It actually got a pretty good, pretty good coverage in overseas newspapers. Aside from that, just talk about everyday things, families. The people I visited were really optimistic about what was going to happen to them. So we'd talk about their appeals, books, films. Yeah, mainly just it was important to give it a human contact because, you know, the way that prisoners are treated over there, they're, as soon as they get convicted, they lose their status as equal human beings. And that's one of the things that Reprieve tries to remedy by giving a bit of human contact and, you know, showing that, well, despite what anyone does, they're still valid human beings.
Must be really difficult for the families too. You were saying that
yes.
These prisons are sort of quite far out of the town.
Yeah, well, by design, the state prison in Louisiana is really hard to get to. It's in a corner of the state, you know, three sides are covered by the Mississippi River. One side is a really dense forest. And, you know, it's not an exaggeration to say that often people who end up in the state prison come from poor families. So it's really, really difficult for their families to come and visit them. You know, often it can be a year or two at a time without people's families coming to visit them, you know, which is just unimaginable. One thing that the organisation I was working for there tried to do was to get family members and help them to visit people in prison.
So you were on a bus with some family members?
Yeah, well, one thing I did, I booked a minivan and took five family members to visit a relative of theirs in the state prison, which, yeah, I mean, it had such a big effect on them and on their relative. That was a really worthwhile thing that the Reprieve did over there.
I had a question more about New Orleans. You were saying before about all the effect that the hurricane had on it, and you were saying off air that they've really taken the hurricane into part of their culture.
Yes.
What was that like?
What do you mean, like as far as...
Like I kind of adopted it as a cultural...
Yeah, it's really interesting and kind of perverse. I guess they've built it into part of their, I guess, their marketing strategy and their identity as a city now. I mean, as well as doing that, they've also learned from what happened in the past in New Orleans, and they're trying to build better levees this time. The evacuation procedure left a lot to be desired last time. They gave people 2 days to get out of town, but then provided no way to actually evacuate the city. So if people didn't have their own car, there were no buses for them to take, so they're pretty much left to their own devices. So there are some moves to stop this from happening should there be a hurricane again. And it's just ticked over into hurricane season this year, so I guess, you know, we'll see if there's another disaster on the same scale this year.
Do you think the response from FEMA will be... I mean, I assume it's going to have to be a little bit better, but do you think it'll be, you know, adequate this time? Or?
I think so. After all the bad press it got last time, I don't really know. I mean, we're just going to have to wait. Like, the levees that were destroyed haven't even been properly rebuilt. So I imagine the only thing that would help the city is that a lot of the people who were living in the lower-lying areas have now been moved out to other cities.
Remember that part of the problem was that... Well, what part of the tragedy, I suppose, is that they did have some information on the fact that the levees weren't going to hold before, and nothing was really done about it.
Yeah, and they encouraged people to move, but then, as I said, they gave them no way to actually leave the city, which was one of the tragedies.
Why do you think that was? Like, do people there have any theories?
People have lots of conspiracy theories. Some people claim, you know, that they heard explosions just before the hurricane hit where the levees were. You know, claiming that the government self-destructed to flood poorer people out. I don't really know how much truth there is to any conspiracy theories there, but I think it was just a matter of, the city was a low priority. It's been a dying city. You know, the population's dropped down by 50% since the 80s, since the oil firms moved out. So, the city really is hanging on by a thread, and that's all it took to, you know, cut it loose.
So, back to the death penalty. You attended a forum at Sydney University last week.
Yeah, that was last Thursday.
To talk about human rights and
yes, and the death penalty was. Oh, sorry, the forum was titled "The Death Penalty: Why Should Australians Care?"
And did you find that particularly interesting after your direct?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, I'd always been opposed to the death penalty, but the experience over there gave me a really practical basis for the opposition to capital punishment, just because I saw firsthand how arbitrarily it was handed out.
Were most of the prisoners charged with? What were the charges that led to the death penalty?
Well, to be eligible for the death penalty, at least in Louisiana, you have to commit a murder with an aggravating factor. The aggravating factor can be anything, you know, as little as stealing $5. The aggravating factor can be killing someone under or over a certain age. In Louisiana, you can also get the death penalty for sexually assaulting a child under the age of 12, and there are two people on death row at the moment in Louisiana for that offence. But yeah, back to this thing last Thursday. It was particularly interesting to have an Australian perspective on it. And they were saying that Australians shouldn't become complacent because we've been an abolitionist country for so long. The tides can always change, and especially with Kevin Rudd's comments before the last election where he chastised his shadow defence minister, for making comments in the vein of, you know, Australia intervening in death penalty case. One thing I should say is I've been talking about the organisation called Reprieve that I was working in America through, and if anyone does want to know any more about it, there's an Australian website, reprieve.org.au, and that's got, I guess, information about recent death penalty cases, information about how you can volunteer. You can also get involved without leaving the country. You can get a pen pal who's on death row, and as I said before, that means a lot to the people who, you know, spend 23 hours a day doing not much, you know, waiting for their fate to get decided, and their fate's in the hands of other people.
We'll have linking information on our website as well.
Excellent.
Which is climateradio.blogspot.com.
This is in Indonesia.
Yeah. So do you know how many states in the US still have the death penalty?
Well, it's probably about 12 or 13 states actually carry it out, and maybe half the states, so 25 or 26, have it on the books. But there are lots that are... that have it on the books but don't actually use it. It's generally the states in the South.
There's been a whole number of reported in the media here cases of, you know, outrages and shock horror when related to the death penalty. Do you know?
Oh, yeah. There's a large amount of
people... Do you have any examples?
Yes. Well, a large amount of people who get sentenced to death, their convictions get overturned before they actually get executed. There are definitely examples of people who've been wrongfully convicted. There are no examples of somebody who's been executed after being wrongfully convicted. Fortunately, people generally get let out, but, you know, lots of people spend 15, 20, 25 years on death row before this comes out.
So is there any compensation for the people who have been wrongfully accused?
There was a case of a guy in Louisiana who got awarded $15 million, which sounds good, but then the Louisiana government refused to pay it to him.
How come? What was their reason?
They said they didn't have the money. So they had the money to, you know, mount several legal cases against him. In that case, the guy was wrongfully convicted because a detective fudged a piece of evidence just to get the conviction, because the detective knew it would look good for him. And then the only reason the guy eventually got let out of jail was because on his deathbed, the detective made this confession, 15 years after he'd fudged the evidence.
So as a law student, did this change your belief in the law or your view?
Yeah, in some way. I guess it gave me a little bit less faith in the law, at least the way that it's carried out in America. It's not like Australia can really take a moral stance. Like, things work similar here, where if you have the money to afford a good lawyer, things are going to generally turn out more so in your favour. And as far as the way the laws are constructed, it's generally just favouring, well, inevitably, the people who make the laws.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting that the now president, while he was governor of Texas, didn't he set some sort of record for the amount of people?
Yes. He actually got elected as governor on a platform. He was saying he was going to execute more people than his predecessor, and his predecessor hadn't particularly been light-handed as far as signing execution warrants. So, so once he got elected, I guess he was obliged to make sure that lots of people got executed. And Texas is one place where if you're on death row, there's a fair chance you'll get executed.
There was a constitutional appeal, though, last year about whether...
Yes, that was not... Yeah, I mean, the constitutional appeal was to do with the method that people were being executed.
So, lethal injection.
Yeah, so not the execution itself. About a month or two ago, that constitutional appeal was denied. So it was business as usual, and a whole bunch more execution dates were set.
They were claiming that it was cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, cruel and unusual, which is, I think, the Fifth Amendment of the US Constitution. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they were saying it was cruel because a whole lot of things had gone wrong with the injection itself. The reason being is because medical practitioners, because of the oath they take, they can't carry out executions. The people who end up doing it are usually prison guards. So there have been a whole lot of problems with it, but not enough problems for the Supreme Court.
It does sound pretty horrific. I think there's a number of chemicals that are put in, and one of them is to paralyse them, but the other one's to... Do you know any of the details of that?
I heard some things in the media saying that, in some circumstances, people were paralysed, and so then when the other drug, which was supposed to numb the pain, didn't work, they weren't in any position to say so, and so were experiencing extreme pain.
Exactly. See, I mean, it's a very inexact way of killing someone, but...
There are three injections, I think.
That's right, yeah. In some ways, I thought that appeal was missing the point because they were questioning whether it was right to kill people by lethal injection, not whether it was right to kill them at all.
Yeah.
But either way, it's a moot point now because that was denied.
Why do you think it was denied? Do you remember what reason...
I think the reason is because, the Supreme Court at the moment is dominated by conservative justices who are pro-capital punishment, who were... That's happened during the conservative years of government.
Were the people in the area... Are the people in New Orleans, are they pro-capital punishment?
Yeah, generally. I mean, people in the South are lovely. You know, contrary to the reputation for being rednecks, actually very personable, really charming, especially when they find out you're from a different country. They're really nice. But then if you get talking to them for a little while, some of their nastier beliefs can become apparent.
Was that quite difficult to live in?
Yeah, it was. I mean, one of my landlords over there... He misunderstood what I was doing. He thought I was working for a prosecution. And he said, yeah, good on you. You got to lock up those people. There's some animals out there. And, yeah, this was my landlord who I was living underneath.
Did you feel it necessary to correct him?
Or? I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
No, I thought he might come after me in the middle of the night.
Let sleeping dogs lie.